some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I'm your host, Garrett Miller, and for the next hour, we've got an awesome show. You have picked the right day to tune in because today we have Sharman McGraw. She's here to talk about all kinds of stuff, but really about leading a passionate life. And so she's going to talk to us about her journey in just a couple of moments. And if you have questions for this talented lady, you can call in today. The hotline is open at the special start time of 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Call in at 323-657-1493. You must press the number 1 on your keypad. Otherwise, I will assume that you are like the other dozen or so folks that are listening right now from your telephone that are calling in to listen, but they don't want to interact. I get it. We're not going to force you to be on there if you don't want to. But if you do have a question for Sharman as the show gets going, you got to press 1. So call in now. Operators are standing by. Like we always do, I always want to give you a rundown of where we've been for the week, where we're going this week, so you can always set your clocks to tune in whenever you want to. And of course, I'll encourage you to hit the follow button right there on your computer, and then that way you'll get an email update once a day or a text update. You get to pick on how you do it, but you'll get an update with the appropriate show link saying, hey, tune in because the show's going live, and you know, I think you get to pick 30 minutes, half an hour, 15 minutes, 2 hours, whatever the case it is, you know, you set it up. It's up to you. And then you'll tune in and be part of the show. Last night, we had comic John Cooperman on the show. Now, I will warn you ahead of time. It's not really so much of a warning as it is just a, if you think something's wrong with the show, hang tight. Right before the show went live last night, my computer decided it didn't want to connect with the internet because it's all done wirelessly. So I said, well, I've got plenty of time to do a restart. So I get the whole computer restarted. We go through the whole exercise, and even John's pinging me on Facebook saying, I don't hear anything, Garrett. I said, I know, because the computer is trying to reboot up. So we went through about 5 or 6 minutes of just stunned silence. Pretend we're having a moment of prayer for whatever cause you would like. That's what we were doing for the first 5 minutes yesterday. And then John and I get into all kinds of discussions about his relatives, his appearances at the Ice House in Pasadena, and so much more. And that's on Monday's show with John Cooperman. Tomorrow night with, with Rated G Radio. I mean, what else are you listening to? You're listening to this show. Rebecca Fisk returns to the program for her March appearance. She is, of course, an intuitive psychic to the stars, and she'll be joining us for an entire hour starting at 7 o'clock. Phone lines open up at 6:45, 15 minutes before the show starts. I tell you this because this way you can call in. When we have Rebecca on, we always get hundreds of people calling in. No joke. The line is out the door, around the block, circled back twice. So if you want to have your question answered, we only get to, 10, 12 people a show. This is your little pre-show secret to call in early. I tell you that because we get what we call, what I call the psychic surfers. They call around to all the psychic shows and ask, the same questions all the time because they never take their advice. So they're asking the same question all the time. So if you want to call and get Rebecca's take on things, call in tomorrow at 6:45. Say, Garrett, you told me to call in early, so I'm calling in early. That's what we'll do, and I'll put you on the air. Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, my co-host Rob Watson and I welcome star of the Learning Channel, TLC's Luke Loy. He will tell us about his TV appearances and what he's doing to make his fans happy around the world. He's calling in from the East Coast. I'm always curious why people on the East Coast don't think 10 o'clock is a late start time for doing interviews. But they're like, no, 10 o'clock is great. Luke thinks it's great. So we're doing it at 7 p.m., the usual time. And then on Friday, the Friday Night Dance Party, we are welcoming a new artist to the show called Eric. Well, it's called. It's his name. But part of it is, the stage name. Eric EQ Young. We're going to find out what the EQ stands for, but Eric EQ Young, that's how he's found on iTunes, is going to be here. We're going to be playing, I think, 5 songs that he has released. We're going to ask him about the difference between releasing singles and releasing albums or EPs, as a lot of the newer artists, young, the hip kids, they're just as soon as the single's done and they got it mastered, they're releasing it and not waiting around for an album. And that's it appears that that is what Eric is doing. So I'm going to find out his marketing strategy for that because he's one of the cool hip kids Finally, on Saturday morning, we have Super Gay Radio at 8 a.m. with my co-host, Paul Emery. He goes by the stage name of Paul en Masse. And we're going to be having an hour of uncensored conversation, not for the kids. And that is at 8 o'clock Saturday morning. Now, one other thing I get to tell you, because this is very, very cool. Saturday, I get to go up and be part of a group song. Remember when everybody was doing Do They Know It's Christmas and We Are the World? There is a project that's going on, put on by producer Rick Giannatos, and he is putting this song called the La La Peace Song. Now, you may remember that from like the early 70s. It's a terrific song, but he's bringing a whole group of people together on Saturday to do the vocals for this, and he has asked me to sing as part of the project. And I get to sing with, you know, like former members of the Supremes, Martha and the Vandellas, I mean, just legends of soul. And then, you know, here I am, Garrett Miller, and I get to go sing with these people and be part of this project for, you know, for posterity's sake. I can't wait to tell you all about that next week. But that's all, you know, what's going on in the show. So without further ado, I want to welcome my guest, and I hope for the first of many times that she will want to come on to the show, Ms. Charmin McGraw. Charmin, how are you today?
Hey, honey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. And, you know, before we start into the show, because my first question is going to be, Charmin, tell us about yourself. I always want to give the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon a big thank you and say hello to Jeff and Jill from SCWA for making the introduction or inviting me to the meeting you and I met so we could become BFFs. So, Jeff and Jill, thank you for making that actually happen. But now that, you know, the formality's out of the way, Charmin, I know a little bit about you, but not a lot. So this is the open-ended question of the day. Who are you, Charmin?
You're so funny. I know. Who am I? Isn't that the question we're all asking?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Who are we? I think, you know, as you know, because I, you know, first of all, you are the most multi-talented person that I know, and I can't wait to hear the La La Peace song. I mean, my God, that will just be really exciting. I can't wait to hear it.
You know, not to get off topic, but, you know, here I am just like the guy, and I'm going to be singing with people that, you know, were part of the Supremes, part of like music history.
Oh, man.
That is like staggering to me. I'm just going, I can't believe that's me. Thank you very, very much.
I love it. Well, you totally deserve it. I mean, no one works harder out there than you. So,
well, bless your heart for that. Your check
will
clear on that, Charmin. Thank you.
Really? Yeah. Okay. No, but thanks to Jeff and Jill too. I mean, our writers group has just been such a blessing to me and such a fun part of my, you know, writing career. And the thing is, I've been a member of that club now for, I was thinking about it, like almost 15 years. And
wow.
It's just, you know, yeah. So I've met so many fantastic authors and learned so much from so many different, you know, avenues there that I, you know, it's really helped in what we're going to talk about today too, because I'm dyslexic, and one of the challenges that I've had to overcome is dyslexia. And you never really overcome it. You just learn to adjust yourself and kind of get over the fact that you can't spell and you're horrible at grammar. But anyway, the writers group really has helped me, and I never would have guessed in a million years I'd ever be a published, you know, author. And so that's one of the challenges that I've learned to overcome through the years. But
how did you get started? Because we're going to talk about so many things this hour. So, I mean, and by the way, if we don't get to all of them, everybody, don't get upset, because we're going to have Charmin back. So it's like, this is the first of a 75-part series. So, you know, don't worry. But Charmin, how did you, you know, going from somebody who is dyslexic, I mean, to say, you know what, I'm going to sit down and write stories that are interesting that people are going to want to read. How do you get to that point? Because I can't even imagine what it must be like just to even try to read a book, let alone sit down and tell a story that, you know, that you feel good about and resonates with you. And then, you know, you don't have all of the other issues that I would think that would go along with that. How was that as part of your journey?
Well, you know, so that part is really interesting. And what, you know, like if we talk about today, I know I'd love to come back 90 million times. But the how I got started, in all honesty, is for, you know, growing up in high school and elementary school, I was undiagnosed with dyslexia. And so I was just painfully getting through school, painfully. And I finally graduated from high school, made it with, you know, if I got a C, woohoo!
Wow. You know?
So, you know, growing up in this area, I grew up in Huntington Beach and moved to Newport later on, where, you know, it's tough if you're not a trust fund baby and you're not on that side. And, you know, we're just working class folks and growing up down by the beach and stuff. But what ended up happening was for years, I wouldn't so much as write a note. I wouldn't want to write a post-it note if someone else was going to see it, because I was so dreadfully scared of making a mistake in my writing and spelling and, you know, things like that. And when I started at Orange Coast College, they tested me at a fourth grade level in English, and they thought I was, it was a joke that I had taken the test. They asked me, did you think this was a joke? And I started crying. I said, no, I didn't think it was a joke. It's very serious to me. You know, and in those days, you know, back in the 80s, they really knew very little about dyslexia, and I think they've actually gotten a little better, but I had to learn how to come into my own self and express myself in a way, because one teacher, and this is really important, kids can be inspired, and no matter what you come from, there's going to be what my friend calls your fairy godmother or fairy godfather, you know, that one person that kind of triggers something, that gives you that one little thing that tells you you're good enough to do something, you know. And the thing that was with me, I had a creative writing teacher at Orange Coast College, and I'd go to class and I wouldn't turn in one stitch of homework, not one stitch.
How do you get
at all?
How do you get through class?
You can't. And she pulled me aside at the midterm, and she's like, you know, I have to fail you, right? And I said, okay, you know. And she said, but why do you bother to come to my class? I don't understand. You don't turn anything in. And I said, oh, this is my favorite class. And she's like, it's your favorite, you know, and she's just dumbfounded, because she's like looking at me like, what? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm so naive and young and scared at that time that I don't know how to speak up for myself or anything. And so I do tell her, I said, well, I've been diagnosed with dyslexia and I've done every assignment, but I'm afraid to turn them in because I can't have you read them. And she was like, oh my God, you know, and I'm crying while I'm telling her, I couldn't help it.
Oh.
And, you know, it was, I can still feel it. I can still remember standing there and what that felt like, you know, and she, thank God, said to me, listen, just turn in your work. And she's like, I'm not, and only you and I are going to correct, are going to read it together. I'm not going to read anything in class. You'll never see, you know, any red marks all over your paper when I turn it back. But just meet with me after class and we'll go over things. And I'm like, okay, I think I can do that, you know. And so I was brave enough to turn in my work. And she pulled me aside after class after that time. And she said, Charmin, oh my God, you're so creative. She's like, you know, you know, in those days we didn't really use computers yet, you know, and she's
right.
Like, someday you'll be able to hire editors. You'll be able to, you know, spelling and grammar. Don't let that get you. Don't, you know, you'll learn, you'll do better. You know, she said, but the talent that you have telling a story can't be taught. You're creating, you know, and that was the one little thing.
I almost have a tear in my eye.
Oh, you're so cute, honey. I just want kids to know. I mean, I come from my sister, you know, one of my sisters has a master's degree. She's very academia. You know, my other sister, my baby sister, has two master's degrees, two BAs. And it's so funny because I don't have any of that. You know, I have an interior design degree.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, in the past, financially, I've probably made more money than all of them put together, you know, and things like that. But you know, that's what's so important to know about yourself. And they're really, you know, I think they're really teaching kids much better nowadays to find their strengths and not their weaknesses. And So I just had to find my strength. And this is the weird part, Jart, on how I actually found my strength was through this horrible illness of having a pituitary brain tumor and a secondary disease called Cushing's disease. Because, and it sounds really weird, but, you know, the thing we have to remember in life are all these dysfunctions or challenges that we have. We really have them for a reason. And, you know, you have to really look at every challenge and say, how is this challenge going to help me grow? How is this challenge going to push me on in life? Not like, how come I've got this challenge, you know, why did it happen to me kind of thing, but really just take it and embrace it. And you know, sometimes it doesn't show up right away where the benefit is for you or what the blessing is, but it does show up. It does show up.
So can you do me a favor? Because I have no idea what you just said about the pituitary brain tumor and Cushing's disease. What are either or both of those, and why are they, you know, so problematic?
Glad you asked. Well, pituitary tumors are a very misdiagnosed illness. And people, I'm sure, listening go, what is the pituitary tumor? Most people think it's in your throat or in the back of your head. But believe it or not, the pituitary gland is as important a part of your body as, say, your heart or your liver, your kidney, anything
what?
Like that. And we know so little about it. And here it is, the most important, one of the most important parts of your body. And if you look at the tip of your thumb and just see your thumbnail, that's how big it is. And the pituitary gland sits actually right at the base of your brain. If you were to put your finger straight through the back of your eyeballs, which you don't do, you would hit the pituitary gland right in between your two optic chiasms. So this little region of the brain, it's not actually in the brain. They're actually like a skull-based tumor. So it sits right below the brain. But the surgeon that does it is a neurosurgeon, and it should be, you know, it's considered neuroendocrine. And your pituitary gland, believe it or not, is your master gland. It's called your master gland for a reason, because it actually secretes the hormones that talk to the other that make, you know, other hormones in your body. So it is the master gland. And when there's a problem with the gland, oh man, I can't even tell you how many issues it causes. And the sad thing is they really kind of mock a lot of like very common things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, high blood sugar, sleeplessness, nervousness, anxiety. I mean, all these things sound very common. And, you know, you wouldn't say, but if you had a combination, and this is what I always like to educate doctors on, if you have a combination of those things and the patient comes, you know, to you and starts complaining that all these things are happening and they have this long laundry list of complaints and really horrible things, they weren't having a workup to rule out the fact that maybe these are all related. And that's the hardest thing in medicine. Most doctors want to treat, okay, well, I'm going to treat the depression, and then this doctor's going to treat the anxiety, and this one's going to treat the obesity, you know, or blame the patient for the obesity. And really, they're all caused by this one little tiny pituitary tumor. And
that's crazy.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy. And I'll tell you what I learned the most. So going back, I started getting sick with symptoms. I was a size 2. I grew up in Newport Beach. You know, my best friend at the time, she was working on Baywatch, and she was the first Miss USA to win Miss Universe pageant. So we would go out, and people would go, oh, are you sisters? Well, you know, I knew the guys were just trying to get to Sean when they were picking up on me. But
well, you're quite the looker yourself.
The
you know that.
Thank you. Well, in those days, I had done some modeling, nothing really, you know, I was shorter, so I couldn't do like high fashion model or anything, but I did like ads for workout things and different stuff like that. And I worked out with a personal fitness trainer that had been a former Mr. Universe in bodybuilding. And I had thought about joining, you know, to get into competition for bodybuilding. And I only had 11% body fat. And out of the blue, I started getting anxiety, which I had never had before. I mean, you know, normal anxiety, but nothing out of the norm. And I started having these horrible anxiety attacks. And so I started putting on a little bit of weight, and mostly in my stomach. And when you're so tiny as a size 2, when you go to the doctor and go, oh, I've been gaining weight and I'm having anxiety, the first thing they go, and I was 31 years old at the time, and this was over 16 years ago. This was in like 1993. And what happened is, so the first doctor I went to, she's like, well, you know, you're getting at that age. Wrong answer. So, and you know, most people don't really understand hormones. I certainly never understood hormones because I never had to. And it's not publicized. I mean, in a million years, I would never have known there was this disease that could cause all of the problems that I ended up having with this tumor. So I go to the first doctor and she's like, you know, I'm going to put you on some antidepressants. You know, you've got probably a hormonal imbalance starting. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm thinking, well, it couldn't be that hard to fix. I mean, I've never been sick. And, you know, so I trust this doctor. I take this antidepressant and I continue to gain weight. So it's coming on, Jared, so rapidly that I couldn't keep clothes in the closet. That is how fast it was coming on. Yeah. I would have to buy clothes one day and the tags would still be on them and I couldn't fit them 4 days later.
No.
Yes. And the funny thing about it, which isn't funny, was at, you know, first I go to these doctors, so then I switched another doctor and another doctor and another doctor because I just felt I wasn't getting the answers, you know. And in those days, we didn't have Google and all of those things where
right.
I could just whip out, you know, put something in and all the answers came up. So I went to the first of the, you know, doctors and they're like, oh, you look good, you know, just gain it. You can't stay a size 2 forever. So I'm like, well, why, you know? I have friends that are still a size 2.
Right, yeah.
You know, so they're telling me exercise more and, you know, eat less. And here I am with this most, you know, this excellent diet. I've never been a fast food person or anything like that. I knew my body because I had worked out my whole life. You know, I had my body fat was 11%. So here I am eating less, working out harder, and gaining more and more weight. And at one point, I was paying my trainer. I had gotten up, so this went on for 7 years. My hair fell out. I had really long, beautiful, thick hair, and it would just come out in the handfuls. And my whole face looked like a big round tomato. And I ended up gaining in my stomach 54 inches. It went out 54 inches.
What?
It was so shocking. People would walk down the street that I knew, and they would look at me like, oh, my God, what's happened to her? You know, I mean, the expression on their faces would make me so sick I didn't want to go out because here I am, you know, once hanging out in Hollywood. I remember going one night with Sean and I with Marcia Croft, the actor, and I remember getting ready at Sean's house when she was living up in L.A., and I was just in tears because I was so upset that I was in a size 8 pants. Now I'm like, ooh, I can just be in that size 8 again. But
Yeah.
So I remember crying, getting ready in Sean's extra bedroom and, you know, oh, my God, we're going to this Hollywood party. And Marcia, you know, and Sean are like still beautiful. And here I'm thinking I'm so obese at a size 8. But anyway, lesson learned, you know, when you go to these things, people are only about themselves anyway. I can tell you right now, I was the only one that knew I was a size 8 because in Hollywood, nobody's looking at anybody but themselves. So anyway, like I like to say, anorexia is a compliment, not a disease in this town. So
that is kind of true.
It is, unfortunately. But so anyway, I go on and I'm seeing doctor after doctor after doctor, spending more and more money on tests, and just really having to deal with this horrible part of my life that has now been is embarrassing. People think I'm doing this to myself. Doctors are accusing me of not caring about myself. And I'm looking at these doctors like, okay, wait, what part of a woman says, oh, I love being a size two, but I would much rather sit on the sofa, eat nothing but freaking bonbons all day and become obese. I mean,
yeah.
Nobody does that.
Nobody says
and the
that.
Fact
yeah.
that No, and the fact that doctors have the nerve, you know, and I'm not here to bash doctors, but I'm here to bring to attention that our medical system is not perfect by any means, you know, and you have to really be your own advocate. And when you know something's wrong, you have to speak up for yourself. And if one doctor doesn't give you the answer, keep going to another and another until you get the answers. But in my case, what ended up happening is I was so sick at one point that, and I had gotten from a size two, which I weighed 120 pounds with 11% body fat, to 200 and almost 50 pounds by at my heaviest.
Oh, my word.
And keep in mind that I had a red rash that went all over my face. My stomach stuck out 54 inches. You wouldn't have recognized me. I was a whole different person. And every time I went to the doctor, I just heard the same old thing, you know, you need to exercise more, eat less, you know, you need to start taking care of yourself. So I went to very famous clinics all over the country, you know, all over the California and everything like that. So it wasn't like I wasn't seeing top doctors. But what ended up happening, so I knew I wasn't going to live much longer, and it was getting that bad. I did continue to work by the grace of God somehow. And I started really meditating and praying and to, you know, and I would see all these things like, all you have to do is meditate and visualize being thin. So I'm doing all that. I'm doing, you know, and nothing's working. But what was working was this inner thing. I kept, you know, I was gaining weight, but shedding things about my personality and shedding these things that had kept me trapped in my life and always taking care of other people, and always everything was about other people's lives and it was never about my life. And finally, I had gotten so sick with this tumor and it had taken everything away from me that I had to really just look at myself. And I think that is not good, but it can be good. And, you know, I tell people, please find your passion before your passion finds you. You know, to get to the point
right.
where, you know. And, but when the passion finds you, you'll know it. And it comes in a pretty heavy way. So one night, I was only sleeping maybe 10 or 15 minutes at a night because I'll explain. Cushing's disease is a secondary disease to a pituitary, caused by a pituitary tumor. But what it's doing is the tumor is independent of the gland. So the gland has, when the gland is functioning normal, it produces a hormone called ACTH. And what the ACTH does is it talks to our adrenal glands. Well, and that produces your cortisol. And cortisol is your fight or flight hormone, and we need it when in case of emergencies and, you know, that kind of thing. But when it's too high, it's deadly. And when it's too low, it's deadly. So that's why, you know, one of the things it is, cortisol is our one life-sustaining hormone. And most people don't even know what it is. So if your pituitary gland, for whatever reason, shuts down and you have no, you know, cortisol, you're not going to live, just like if your heart stopped or anything. Thank goodness this little gland is even though for its size, it's really mighty. And so when it forms a tumor, like either with ACTH or prolactin or IGF-1, which is your growth hormone, they form these different diseases. And in my case, I had Cushing's. And with Cushing's, you gain weight and you have sleeplessness because my cortisol levels were triple the normal. Did I lose you? Oh, there you are. Are you there?
I just fell out of my chair.
Well, honey, get back up. It's not over yet. This ride was really a ride.
So can I ask you okay,
yeah.
So how I guess I'm so stumped that out of all of these doctors that, and I guess, you know, I'm not a big fan of Western medicine, but I'll save that for a different show. But
yeah.
I think the part that I'm just like stunned about here, Sharman, is the fact that, you know, you've gone to, you know, dozens of doctors and, you know, they're all saying it's going to be this or that or the other thing. Were you, I guess I don't know why I am so dumbfounded, but I am dumbfounded that out of all these people that you went to go see, that there was no consistency as far as, well, we think it's this, we think it's this, we think it's
right.
this, and that you had to shop around for an answer. And I guess my other, it's more of a statement than a question is, you know, when, you know, you're getting these doctors that are saying, you know, it's because you eat too much gluten or whatever it is, and
right.
you know it's not.
Right. You know, drink Diet Coke. I was even told, oh, it's because you're drinking Diet Coke.
So you stop drinking Diet Coke. And so, you know, when is it that, you know, that you become the crazy one for continuing to shop for an answer that you want to hear versus trusting the medical professionals that are supposed to know how to test and treat whatever ailments come your way? And I guess
you know,
that's
the best question. That is absolutely that question is the golden question, because what ends up happening is many patients that suffer with this disease become hypochondriacs. And we're actually really told
right.
while seeing doctors that you are a hypochondriac. And trust me, there are hypochondriacs out there. I mean, but unfortunately, this line gets blurred, because doctors are not putting pituitary tumors on their radar. And they believe, because historically they were taught so many, you know, historically that pituitary tumors are so rare, they'll never see them in their lifetime. It's not true. What we find now, and all the pituitary experts that I work with across the country realize, that so many people are walking around without a diagnosis is the problem, because they present far too long, you know, with these common health problems, and doctors just aren't putting it together. And we do, you do. I even question myself. I mean, after so long, these doctors telling me that it was nothing medically wrong with me, there was just, you know, nothing medically wrong. Even though if you looked at me, people were literally frightened. I have my, you know, my best friend at the time, Sean, I remember one time her looking at me and yelling at me and saying, just go on a diet. Quit going to doctors. They keep telling you there's nothing wrong with you. But which broke my heart, for one thing, because
right.
I knew at my core there was something medically wrong. It was impossible in life to go over one way your whole life and then upside down with
yeah.
overnight. And I refused to ever to take that as an answer. But what I had to do is I had, you know, I started on my journey and I knew there wasn't much time left. I mean, I got to the point where I was drooling. I couldn't control like a side of my face even. I was,
Bell's palsy or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't articulate sentences properly anymore. So I would wake up, you know, in the morning and I would look and I would put my feet on the ground and I would say, is this the day that whatever it is going to take my life? Because how much sicker am I going to get before I just don't make it anymore, you know? And it still touches my heart when I say that, because I'm still, you know, I'm advocating for patients out there that I'm still even 16 years after my successful surgery, I'm still hearing these stories from patients. You know, I mean, we've moved the golf ball 1 inch closer to the sun, but we haven't quite got there yet where pituitary tumors are thought to be in the mainstream of the medical, you know, community. But we're working on it. But for myself, what ended up happening is when I started asking for answers and I really peeled away all these dysfunctions, you know, I was going to, I got to the core of myself and I realized that who I was. And I knew that, like, growing up in a dysfunctional home, growing up, you know, growing up, well, I'm sure you saw the man on TV, that the 78-year-old man at the Trump rally that hit the young man.
I did happen to see something about that.
Yeah, I think it was all over the national news. Well, that's my father. My father was the man that hit the kid. Yeah,
what?
And it was really shocking for our whole family to see that. And, you know, as much as I haven't spoken with my father in years, and neither has my family, but he is my father. And I, you know, we have different political beliefs. We have different beliefs in what I call an American and what I call abuse and what he calls passion, you know. But but my point is here that all people have challenges, whether it be health or growing up in these dysfunctional homes or whatever it is. But at your core, all these things help you. You know, I don't think fighting through this disease, I don't know if I could have made it had I not grown up in this, you know, dysfunctional family where my, you know, I had my brother, he's been sober 25 years. I'm grateful for that. But growing up when he was in his worst at drinking, home life was horrible. You know, I have an older sister. She passed away from alcoholism, and bless her heart. You know, I mean, I took care of her for many years. And the thing is, getting through this disease was horrible. But guess what? All those traits that I had from this dysfunction on how to fight through things and how to overcome these things and still be successful helped me directly dealing with this illness and having to deal with doctors and people and that didn't believe me. And the few friends that I had that did support me were great, but they didn't know how to make it better either, you know? So, I mean, in life, we've got to really always take our adversities and find out in the future, like, those things are made to help me, you know? I mean, down the line, who would have ever guessed growing up, wishing I had a father, now knowing I was probably better off without the father at home, you know? And then later on finding out that those same things that I learned through that helped me get through a disease that could have killed me. And so, you know, at the time though, you're going through it, you don't see it because you don't know the answers. So if you know, having faith in yourself and having faith that the universe always has our back. We may not like the out, you know, we may not see it at the time, but you know, our biggest, darkest part of our life can always become our best part of our life. And it's sometimes just cleverly disguised as a horrible illness, like in my case. So long story, I started meditating and I was talking to the guy that does my hair. He's a good friend of mine. And he said, gosh, Charmin, you know, you would love Agape, the spiritual center that I go to. And I'm like, oh, I've heard of Agape, but, you know, I don't know much about it. And he said, you know, oh, man, the energy in there is so high. And I had just started listening to Caroline Mays and Abraham Hicks and, you know, and everything like that.
Wow.
And, yeah, it all started coming around because I've been raised very I grew up at Calvary Chapel and, you know, all of that. And so, but I always was very intuitive and I always knew, because I'm a Pisces, I always knew myself really well, you know, and I always had this intuition that I could see things and, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But anyway, I ended up going to Agape and it was my vibration. I mean, I just knew when I walked in there was a bigger picture for me. There was something that was going to happen soon, and I either would get well or pass away. But if I passed away, it was okay because I would leave with that knowing what was helping someone else through whatever I had. So one night I went home and I never slept a full night. And I prayed before I went in, I was meditating, and I said, universe, you know, I feel there's a bigger picture. Just show me what that bigger picture is. And if I die, that's fine. But just know I don't want my obituary to read obese woman dies of unknown causes, you know? So that night, I fall asleep and this person comes in a dream and it was as real. And I recognized the person, and it was Joseph in the Bible from The Coat of Many Colors.
And oh, wow.
It's probably the only story I know that well in the from the Bible, because I was in a play when I was in junior high, you know. But anyway, I said to Joseph, I'm crying in my dream, and I said, Joseph, are you here? Did God send you to heal me? And Joseph said, no. And I'm like, why are you here then? I want to get well, you know. And Joseph says, he's sitting on my bed, and he says to me, no, because in God's eyes, you're not sick. And I'm like, well, in the world's eyes, I'm sick. And he said, yes, but what the doctors mean for your harm, God means for your good. And I'm like looking at him, and I'm crying, and I say, you don't understand. I'm very sick. I can't live this way. And he said, but in God's eyes, you're not sick. There's no illness. It's just the journey. There's only a journey. And I was like, okay. And at that moment, I got this peace like over me that I kind of understood, you know. And he said, God's got a bigger picture for you. And just be open to all things. And I'm like, okay. So I woke up, and this person's gone, and my sheets are soaking wet from me crying. But I had this like new awakening that it was okay. Like something was okay. As sick as I was, it was okay. And so a few days later, I went to Agape, and they said, you know, afterwards, Reverend Michael announced, hey, there's a class, and, you know, it's finding your heart's desire and all of this stuff. And I'm like, I want to go. I want my heart's desire. I want to go. So I went to the class afterwards, and the first thing they said to me was, if all your needs were met and you had no limitations, what would be your heart's desire? And I remember looking at them and saying, I want to be well. And I want to live my life. And they said, do you believe it's true? And I said, yes. And that moment, Jared, I'm not even kidding you. I remember it like it was yesterday. I got this feeling, this chills, this to go straight home, and I would diagnose myself. And I didn't have a computer at the time, and I had been trying to use other people's computers, and, you know, but it wasn't like we had Google and all that at the time. So I drove from Agape in L.A. straight to my friend Pat and Daisy's house in Costa Mesa, and I knock on their door at like 7 o'clock at night, and I'm like, Pat, boot up your computer. And he goes, okay, you know. And I remember sitting there looking at it like, you know, and there was one word. I had went through all my medical records, and I had studied them. And there was this one, I had went up to the Samson Clinic in Santa Barbara, and they had promised, oh, our team of doctors, we'll figure out what's wrong with you. And I get up there, I spend all this money to drive up there and to stay in a hotel. I'm there for, you know, I meet with one doctor, and he tells me there's nothing wrong with me. So then I begged them to keep testing me. So they just because I sounded like a crazy person, they ended up doing more tests. So they send me home a few hours later with this one report saying, she has symptoms. She looks like she could have Cushing's, but her eyes are clear and her mouth is clear. So they had ruled out Cushing's. And the one thing that I thought I didn't have was something called Cushing's. And then my other thing, the only hormone that was high in all the lab work that people had done on me was this one hormone, cortisol. And the cortisol was triple normal. And when I had asked doctors, what is this hormone? They had told me, well, that's because you're obese. And I started realizing they were wrong. Someone had missed something, that the cortisol was causing the obesity, not the other way around. So I sit down at Pat's computer and I put in the word cortisol. And it was like the heavens open up. I mean, I still to this day, Jared, cannot tell you like how dumbfounded you were to even hear there's such a disease.
Right.
Imagine living for 7 years, completely your life ripped out from underneath you, a totally different person. You have nothing left. And you look at, and you fought and you fought and you fought, and you look at a computer and it says every one of the symptoms right there
Oh my
diagnoses.
God.
Exactly. And all I remember is Pat and Daisy going, oh my God, that's you. And me speechless saying, just sitting there going, oh my God, I'm not crazy. Oh my God, I'm not crazy. This is a real disease. There's really something that causes this. It's a tumor. Why? You know, and then I started going, oh my God, why did doctors not say this? And then I started reading, you know, it's rare and it's this and it only affects this amount of people. So I print out everything. I called some of the doctors that I was seeing at the time and I said, I need an MRI. I know I have Cushing's disease. And this endocrinologist that I was seeing up here in Newport Beach, who was like the head of a very well-known hospital, who had treated me horribly, and at one point even shook his finger in my face and said, do not tell me how to diagnose you. Because I kept insisting, you need to do more testing. You need to figure out what's wrong with me. And he was like, you know, it was just, you know, just bad medicine. And so anyway, I called his office and said, I want an MRI and I want it now, because that was the next step that I had to take to see if I actually had a tumor in the gland that could be causing this high level of cortisol. So he called me, the doctor literally called me and said to me, I never said nothing was wrong with you, but I just don't know what's wrong with you. Now, keep in mind, he was the head endocrinologist. That's the endocrine system. He should know what was wrong with me with high levels of cortisol, high levels of ACTH, you know, all the symptoms. I could have been a poster child. So he tells me there's some doctors up at UCLA, and at the time they were at UCLA, now we're not, but that I think can help you. I said, well, I need an MRI. And he said, no, let's let the doctors at UCLA have something to do. I'll never forget that comment. I was so rude and so uncalled for. So I went to a family doctor that I had, and I said, I need an MRI. And he said, well, why is it your endocrinologist won't order the test? And I said, because he doesn't believe I have Cushing's. So he called him and he said the endocrinologist said the same thing to my doctor. So he said, no, I'm not going to do an MRI. You don't have this. It's too rare. You couldn't have it. And I said to him, I want you to put that in writing, exactly what you just said to me. And he was like, what? I said, I want it in writing, because when my attorney calls you to sue your ass, you're going to have to, I'm going to have the proof on what your stupidity was. And he was like, all right. So he writes the script for the MRI and he's like, and he goes, good luck. I'm not kidding you. And these are doctors in Newport Beach. These are not, you know, I mean, these are affiliated with big hospitals. They're not, you know, it's not like I'm going to some little mini clinic. And so anyway, I go and I get the MRI with and without contrast. They do the brain, you know, they put you in the head care, you know, thing. It's just, but at that point you could have done anything to me as long as you were going to get me to a diagnosis. And so the MRI came back negative. So they showed no signs of tumor. I had done my research by that time where I read that as high as 30% of these little tiny ACTH tumors are so deadly, but they don't even show up on an MRI. So I knew now going into my appointment at UCLA that I needed to bring all my materials and all this stuff, because I thought I'd have to convince these doctors that this is what I have, you know. So it took 2 months to get the appointment up at UCLA at the time. And Dr. Van Hurley and Pejman Cohan is still my endocrinologist. But at the time, he was a fellow with Dr. Van Hurley, who has since retired. So as the time goes on, I start thinking to myself, you know, oh my God, if I could diagnose myself, how come over 7 years these doctors couldn't diagnose me? You know?
Right.
So I started questioning everything. I started questioning, was like that dream real? Did that, you know, does God have a bigger plan for me? You know how, you know, you start questioning yourself when you have no reinforcement. Everybody's looking around like, okay, I never heard of Cushing's. So if it's that serious, I'm sure everybody would know about it, you know. So they start making you feel more crazy. And so at the time, I heard on the radio, and I had listened to K-Earth 101 at the time, and they said they were looking for people to sell airtime and to send your resume. And I'm like, something, I mean, I had never sold airtime. I had never thought of selling airtime. But there was something so strong about that that I'm like, I'm going to send my resume. So I had wanted to get out of the interior design business, and, you know, so here I am, and it was so funny. I look back now at the resume I sent. It had spelling errors. It was like the worst thing I could have ever sent either. But I was so crazy because high levels of cortisol just make you a bit crazy anyway with these high levels of hormones. But I was so desperate to get well that something told me, send the resume. So I had sent a cover page, and I'm an artist. So I drew on the cover page a cartoon character, okay, to one of the biggest radio stations in the country, right?
Oh, so my gosh.
I draw this little cartoon on the cover, and it says, stop. And it says, you've got the right person. And I said, although I'm very professional, I think we have to have a little humor in life. So please give me, you know, please read my resume. And so I didn't hear back. Surprise. I call him because something about this would not let go inside of me. It was bizarre. So I called the radio station, and I'm like, yes, I sent my resume. And they're like, uh-huh. Well, so did 5,000 other people. Thanks, honey. We'll call you, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I hung up, and I'm like, nope, I'm getting an interview with them. I knew it like the day was long. I knew it, you know. And so the next day, I got an interview. They called me.
What?
I'm not kidding you, right? So I'm like, I knew it. So I'm driving up to the interview. Got my, you know, keep in mind, I'm almost, you know, I'm 250 pounds. My hair looks, but I always knew how to put my makeup on, try to hide the red in the face. You know, my shoes were like three sizes too big because my feet were so swollen. I couldn't even get my shoes on. I just looked like a little round roly-poly something. But I had my hair as nice as I could and my makeup, and I had a nice little suit on that a friend had given me for probably the one that was, you know, for pregnant women, but because I had to wear those clothes too.
Oh, Charmin.
So I'm driving up to LA to the radio station, and I start panicking again. And I'm thinking my appointment was in 2 weeks to go to the doctor to get a diagnosis that I believed I had, that God had told me or the universe had told me that there was this bigger picture for my life. So I'm driving up there, and I said to the universe, we have a deal, right? Because in the deal, I want to get well. I don't want this job. I want to get well. And this bigger picture that you've told me about, I want to start living it. I want to. And I felt so excited about it, you know, even though I'm on my last leg. I don't know if I'm going to live 6 months at this point. So I say to God, if all of this was in my head and this is just a waste of my time, and there's no such thing as Cushing's disease and no such thing as pituitary tumor, and I'm supposed to just live into, you know, accept that I might die, then at least let me make a lot of money until I do. So, you know, I mean,
come on.
So I get in there. Right. I swear to God. So then I get into the radio station, and they give me this test. Well, keep in mind, I'm dyslexic, so and I'm also bad at math, but I'm a great artist. So, so anyway, I go in, and I pull out of my briefcase that I've carried, my little satchel with me, and I pull out a calculator, and I pull out a spell checker, and and they're looking at me like, huh? Like I felt like they thought I was cheating, but I'm thinking, well, I don't want to get the questions wrong, so I want to spell everything right. I'm smart enough to carry my spell checker with me. And, of course, we didn't have, you know, the same type of cell phone in those days, our iPhones, you know. But so anyway, they come to me because I can see them, like, talking amongst themselves, like, what is she doing? So
yeah.
One of them says, oh, don't worry about filling that out. You know, so-and-so's going to see you now. So I'm like, okay. So I walk into this woman's office, and she looks at me, and she says, I don't know how you got this interview. And she has a stack of resumes on her desk, you know, knee high. And I said, well, they called me. And she said, I understand that, but your resume, you do interior design. I need someone that sold airtime. And she said, you know, so we start talking. She and I just start having a conversation, and within like 15, 20 minutes, she's looking at me and she says, oh my God, you're exactly what I want to hire. Because I had been in sales and, you know, in interior.
Oh, yeah.
But really, I was just being authentic because the universe had told me I needed to be there. So I didn't know, you know, I didn't overthink it. I just knew. And I had made this deal with God that if I got the job, I was going to make a lot of money. And if I didn't, I was going to get well, you know. So she says to me, she says, I want you to go. She said, first of all, training is in 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, and it was going to start the same day as my appointment at UCLA. And I started to panic, like, oh, God, I don't want to make the money. I want to get well. You know, like, I didn't want to. Don't think I'm switching it up here. So I'm like, okay. So I'm just listening to what she says. And she says, listen, training is hard. And, you know, not everybody makes it through. We'll hire, like, six people. Only three will probably end up. She said, but I want you to go on to your second interview today and meet with the president of sales. And I was like, okay. And so she calls him, and she's like, he wants to see you. So we go down the hall. She introduces me and leaves the room. So this guy says to me, he's dressed, you know, like, you know, Armani. It looks like he's just walked out of a fashion magazine, you know. And he looks at my resume, and he says, how in the world did you even get this interview, let alone impress her enough to walk you down here? Because so far out of all her interviews, she hasn't walked anyone to my office.
Wow.
So,
and Sherman, just real quick,
yeah.
We've got 2 minutes left. So see, this is just proof positive.
Oh,
I have to have you back. So
you've got to have it back.
Yes, because we have to go. But I want you to kind of finish up as much as we can. And this is going to be the cliffhanger, because
okay,
we won't know what happens until you come back.
Well, the cliffhanger on this one is that we started talking, and he says to me, I want you. I want to hire you, and you're exactly what I want. And I almost start crying because I didn't want the job. I wanted to get well. And then out of the blue, like, he goes, I don't want you to answer right now. And he goes over, and he kind of shuts the door, and I'm thinking, what the hell? And he looks at me, and he says, I could get fired for saying what I'm going to say to you, but I have to. He says, I want to know if, he goes, when you walked in the room, God told me you have a deal with him. And the deal with the universe is bigger than selling airtime. And I'm just like shocked at this point, shocked. He says, now I could lose my job for saying this. He says, but if you can tell me that if all your needs were met and you had no limitations,
no,
your desire, exactly, if your heart's desire is to sell airtime, you call me tomorrow and you've got the job. He goes, but I think I think the deal you have with the universe is bigger. I could be wrong and I could lose my job. And I'm looking at him and I'm in such shock, and it still gives me goosebumps when I remember this story, and I start crying. And little does he know, I looked at him, I said, I don't need the job. And he goes, I didn't think so. He goes, I don't know. And I didn't tell him at that moment what was going on, because I didn't know if I was going to get well or whatever. I said, he goes, I don't know. He goes, I'm a minister on, you know, and I go, well, I go to Reverend Michael's church. He goes, oh, my God, Reverend Michael and I grew up together. He said, listen, Charmin, I sold my soul to radio. I make a lot of money. He's like, but on the side, I'm a minister at, you know, at a spiritual center. And he said, There's a big picture for you. I felt it so strong when you walked in. And he gave me
and
a
Sharman,
hug. And
guess what? This is where we have to end it.
We're
so out of time. So, with that, everybody, I feel like this is one of those, to be continued. It totally is. Now I've got to figure out when we're going to get Sharman back. Sharman, it has been a pleasure having you here. For everybody else, please tune in tomorrow night. We are completely out of time. The computer's going to shut us off in 10 seconds. So please go back and re-listen to the part one of Sharman's story, and we will see you live on Wednesday night. Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.